Finance Committee to order. Just waiting for the tape to start and ask Commissioner Ines to join us. We're waiting for you, Commissioner. come on up to the table. And I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton to join Commissioner Ines. Ms. Dalton, can you just join Commissioner Ines too? We have to adjourn at 4:15, so we're not going to get to the Capco bill, and the Republicans are caucusing, so we really don't want to cover too much ground without everybody here. But one thing we can do is talk about the... I'd ask the commissioner if he would get us, you know, on the tape for the record what the governor is going to do as it relates to ringtones and streamline. So maybe we could get that piece out of the way. And if it's okay with Commissioner Ines, I'd like to first ask Ms. Dalton to remind the committee what the issue is. And we do need to know where the governor is going to be on this. So if Pat Dalton can tell us what the issue is for the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. Minnesota is one of the governing states for the streamlined sales and use tax.
Someone's cell phone is on or something. You're getting drowned out by that. If you have your cell phone on, you got to turn it off. Even if your ringer's on, it still does that.
Yeah.
I'm checking mine too. Okay, so Ms. Dalton, sorry.
Minnesota is one of the governing states in the streamlined sales and use tax agreements, which means that we are currently in total compliance with that agreement. Every state that is a member state has to go through a compliance recertification every year. In August, we went through our recertification, and we were found in compliance with everything except one thing, and that is how we tax ringtones. Streamlined sales tax requires us to use definitions that have been, if the streamlined sales and use tax agreement defines something, you have to either tax all of that definition or none of that definition. Since we originally got in compliance, the streamlined sales and use tax agreement has developed definitions of digital goods, and one of them is digital audio goods, and that includes ringtones. The only digital audio good we currently tax is ringtones, so to remain in compliance, we either have to quit taxing ringtones or we must start taxing all digital audio goods. We have until our next compliance review to essentially correct that mistake, that non-compliance issue.
Okay, and before we move on, I think Representative Marquardt wants to formally call the Property Tax Committee to order.
We will call the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order.
Okay, great. Okay, so can I just, before we go on to hear what the governor would like to do here, Commissioner, for members will recall, we count money as revenue to the state as a result of being in compliance with this. And the question is, if we fall out of compliance, how will we address the revenue loss, no matter, if the position is we should do nothing, how will that be built into the forecast, and how will that increase the deficit, that kind of stuff. But first, we'd like to hear what the commissioner, if he could tell us the governor's view on this issue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ainsworth, the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And the administration has been a supporter of the Streamlined Sales Tax Initiative. As Ms. Dalton said, we've been a full-fledged member, voting member of the initiative for, I think, the last 10 or 15 years. As the chair rightly noted, we're silent in our budget relative to the Streamlined Sales Tax project and as far as the being in conformity. And the governor has said publicly and privately that he's not supportive of extending the sales tax to digital downloads. He's made that very clear. The alternative, as Ms. Dalton said, was to exempt ringtones, which I think has a revenue impact of about $250,000 a year. So we could go in that direction or to be back into conformity. And we would be supportive of that. It's not reflected in our budget, but if this committee and the Senate Task Committee agreed to get us into conformity by exempting the ringtones, the governor would be supportive of that initiative. As far as the revenue impact, I talked to Dr. Wilson. We've also talked to our colleagues at MMB about what, if any, revenue impact we would have if we're deemed out of compliance. Late 2010 is when we would expect to be deemed out of compliance. So I guess there's two questions that need to be addressed by the governing board. First of all, they got to rule us out of compliance. And I think it's probably accurate to say they will rule us out of compliance. The next threshold is, are we substantially out of compliance with the agreement? And there's not a bright line there. In the past, they've given certain states an additional time to get into compliance, another legislative session to get back into conformity with the agreement. What the penalty would potentially be, it could be suspension of voting rights, it could be, you know, any number of things, but there hasn't been a consistent application of what it means to be in and out of compliance. So when I talked to our folks who attend, Assistant Commissioner Larry Wilkie and Director of Sales Tax Kathy Wicks, they felt pretty confident at this point that we may be deemed out of compliance, but there was very much an open question whether there'd be any revenue consequences to the state of Minnesota if we were ruled out of compliance by the governing board. So what we thought for purposes of the budget, the purpose of the February forecast, really far too speculative at this juncture to, you know, book any revenue loss, potential revenue loss. And I think, you know, what I heard from our staff who attend those meetings is that there's a real possibility that the next administration, if we don't do anything this session, the next administration may be given another opportunity to get into compliance before any, I don't know what you want to call it, penalties or consequences are doled out by the governing board.
Okay, so Commissioner, more stuff on the record here, so we just can spend our time wisely. So for members, and I think you just received this too, Commissioner, the revenue estimates,
right.
There's two of them in front of members. One is the taxation of digital audio works, and the other one is the ringtone. So the governor's for the ringtone. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that'd be correct.
Okay. And obviously it costs a lot less, so that's one thing. Can I just ask you if the tax committee pursues the digital audio works and the Senate does too and it passes, is that a veto item for the governor?
Madam Chair, I would expect it would be a veto item.
Okay. And then can I just ask you if you know, and I had the pleasure of going to that last conference with Larry Wilkie, and what an experience. I've never seen people fight in such incredible detail about these items that, you know, are the marshmallows and Lucky Charms, is that food or not food, and should that have a sales tax or not? And what members should know is all our Minnesota big companies are down there because it's a big deal to them, and it's big sales tax to them. And Ms. Dalton's been going to these for years and years and is really an expert in the nation in this area, and Mr. Wilkie for the Department of Revenue. And I admit, total novice, just sort of watching it all. But I did just, you know, want to talk a little bit on the record if you're wrong, Commissioner, and they throw us out and they don't say you get six more months or whatever because there's, you know, no effort to pass anything. How will your department recommend for forecasting, how will we count the money lost to the state if we have to? Is it in the $50 million a year range, or do we know what we're booking for it right now?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think at this point it's very speculative. The number that's been thrown around is, worst case scenario, it'd be $20 million. You know, what's happened is many businesses have voluntarily decided to register sales tax in these states who are members of the Streamlined Sales Tax Project. Whether they would decline to continue to be registered if we pulled out, at least for Minnesota purposes, I think it's a very much an open question. I think worst case scenario, $20 million is kind of what our people are speculating would be the worst case scenario.
Ms. Taunton, you want to add to this? Thoughts?
Madam Chair, Department of Revenue has a much better handle on how much money is being booked. I mean, one of the things to also keep in mind is if we are kicked out of the agreement, we cannot use any information that we have gotten from being a member of the agreement to go and audit any companies.
Okay.
Right. And Madam Chair, you know,
okay.
What we've heard primarily is from Assistant Commissioner Larry Wilkie and others is that we may be deemed out of compliance. They wonder if the ringtone issue exclusively will rise to the level of substantial noncompliance, when that's usually when the penalties, potentially losing your voting rights, being kicked out of the governing board, would kick in. I want to make it clear that the administration is still a strong proponent of streamlined sales tax. We think it's a worthy endeavor in many ways. I am frustrated, though, by the lack of momentum that it currently has. I mean, we've been doing this for 10 to 15 years or so. How long?
It's only been eight.
It feels a lot longer than that. But and we have been at the table, as you've seen how those meetings work. You get down in the minutia, working through very complex definitional challenges, and the momentum seems to have really dissipated quite a bit in the last few years. And I think part of it is there was a whole generation of governors and tax administrators and others who were very much committed to it. They were the founders of the Streamlined Sales Tax Project, and those people have come and gone. So now there's a second generation coming forward that maybe aren't as committed as that first generation was. We've seen at the federal level, you know, the Congress has not even introduced a bill relative to Streamline for this current session. We thought that there may be a renewed motivation at the congressional level just because of the struggle the states are having. This is a way to capture additional sales tax revenue that's owed. But we haven't seen that. You know, they have a lot on their plate right now. Obviously, this isn't a first-tier issue. But I think we've seen, to a certain extent, just the momentum kind of losing momentum here over time. And you also see now the Amazon issue coming up, and some of the states saying, heck with streamlined sales tax, we're going to go alone and start passing these affiliate nexus laws. So there's a lot of noise out there right now. I know that the governing board is still trying to struggle ahead. We've been a very committed member over the last 8 years, and we still believe in the endeavor, but it really, we got to be honest with each other, it has lost a lot of momentum.
Okay, and we were kind of stalling so you guys could get out of caucus, so we don't have much time. We want to talk a little bit about the governor's proposal on property taxes. So just to wrap this up, though, I do want to say, Commissioner, I think the members of this committee do not understand how important this issue is to Minnesota businesses. And I encourage the Minnesota business community, the lobbyists here, to get people engaged on this. It is true that if it just stalls, you know, we're not the losers in that game. Minnesota businesses are the loser in that game. And so I think people need to wrap their heads around the issue. And I will just add that I think one of the problems is that most of the states, due to budget crises, have banned out-of-state travel for legislators and their staff. And Speaker Swigum did that, and Speaker Kelleher did that. And so what happened is, all across the country, legislators couldn't go get informed on what this meant. And the Streamlined Sales Tax Group, actually, their board passed a resolution as part of their dues, an airline ticket for one legislator per state, just to get legislators back in the room so they could begin to debate the issue again. And it was actually Ms. Cadoon who came and asked me to go. So part of the problem, the stalling, is we've got budget crises, and so speakers around the country and Senate majority leaders feel like they can't send, you know, Representative Lanning off to understand the issue. And so that is another problem in all this. I don't have any solution for that, but I think the Minnesota business community, who has met with myself and Commissioner and Senator Bach repeatedly, is very concerned about this issue and understands that they are big beneficiaries if we can get our streamlined sales tax project underway. So I just want people to understand it a little bit. So thank you. And so now to the property tax part of the governor's proposal.
Right, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, I know we were working off this like two-page document earlier. I think we got to everything on page one. And if you go to page two, about halfway down, there's a property tax provision called the Charter School Property Tax Exemption.
And Commissioner, we asked people to save it, but if you missed that and you don't have it, just raise your hand. The pages have more, so you can get the governor's proposal in front of you again. And I also ask that people keep it again, because we won't get through all the governor's budget today. Commissioner, sorry.
And Madam Chair, I know that you've posted online the language.
Yes.
And I believe the bill will be introduced. It will be introduced.
I think Representative Broad had it on introductions today, I think. Yeah. Okay. That's so great. It's available now, the language.
Thanks, Madam Chair. But the charter school property tax exemption is halfway down the page, and there's a recommendation the governor's making. We became aware of the fact that there's many charter schools that are currently exempt from property taxes that under the current law should not be exempt. The current test for property tax exempt status for a charter school that's leasing its property is that it only pay nominal rent. Well, the reality is the vast majority of charter schools are paying market rate rent, but the property is still being tax exempt. And so in order to make the current practice consistent with the law, we're recommending this change. And basically this change is whether if you're leasing property in a charter school, you're going to be tax exempt for property tax purposes. The assessors were really struggling with the issue. What constitutes nominal rent? There isn't a real well-fleshed-out definition in the law. It's basically something, you know, substantially less than market rate rent. So this would make a very bright line out there for charter schools, and would basically say that if you're a charter school leasing from either a for-profit or not-for-profit, they are exempt from property taxes.
Okay, excuse me, Representative Broad, and I think Representative Broad's bill that was introduced was not this. But I think we do have language in the folders.
Great. I just wanted to clarify for the record, actually, the bill that I introduced today is a jobs bill, portions of the governor's proposal, and that bill now is online for members. The language of the governor is, I think, going to be introduced at the next legislative session, so I would expect the full language to be available to all members, not just members of the tax committee, when that's introduced probably on Thursday.
Okay, so I'll ask Ms. Bergman, what language is this? Is this the governor's?
Yeah, and it's
also. Okay, so this is here too. So I think we've got it if you want to reference it. Okay, sorry. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if we don't make a change like this, what will happen is that we will send out notices to all the 87 assessors throughout the state of Minnesota, directing them to go out and reevaluate the charter schools in their jurisdiction. And the high probability is that most of those will become taxable under the current law. So we were trying to get ahead of that a little bit and propose this, basically saying no matter if you lease from a for-profit or a non-for-profit, you will be exempt as a charter school. The argument being it's a public school, it would seem to make sense to make it consistent.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Ines, what do you mean by when you say nominal rent? When assessors go out and say a nominal rent, what would you be paying? I mean, in given a specific instance.
Yeah, and, you know, I've asked our property tax folks a couple for a definition of that. The simplest one to say something less than break even from the landlord's perspective. So there have to be an economic gift aspect to the value of the leased property that they're giving to the charter school. Department of Education has done a pretty good scan of the environment out there, and Mr. Melcher would basically say there's very few, if any, charter schools that are paying anywhere near nominal rent. They're almost all paying market rate.
Okay, so, Madam Chair,
yes.
And Commissioner Ines, I appreciate the language is meant to fix this up and and make a bright line for these organizations, but what about the current language is not bright line enough for them on that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, it is. The struggle, I think, that we're having is that the definition of, I think, first of all, many assessors did not realize that nominal rent was the threshold. I think they view these as public schools. The charter schools are a public school, exempt status. So we've sent out flyers to try to educate and get them up to speed on what the current law is. We met with the Department of Education. They concurred that our reading of the law is the accurate reading. And I think the whole question comes down to is that either assessors did not realize that the threshold was nominal rent. And then once you get beyond that, like exactly what you said, Representative, there's no precise definition of what that constitutes. Is it a dollar? No, it's something more than that. Is it close to break even, but some kind of charitable element to the leases below market rate rent? We don't have a lot of precision. We've put out some notices to try to flesh that out, but we thought it'd be better. You know, assessment is a very, it's a very imprecise science. And we thought a clear, bright line would benefit everybody included, including the charter schools that are currently exempt, probably in contrary to current law.
Okay, thank you. And Madam Chair, just by way of comment, thank you for that clarification, Commissioner Ines, too. And as some members are aware, I did a little bit of work on this in past years about charter schools. And while there are most of them are good actors, there are some that just operate their charter schools as a scam with the sister owning the property and the brother being president of the board, and then they filter back public tax money and running an operation. So I am encouraged if, in fact, we are holding some of these charter schools more accountable as they should be, but if, in fact, they're not following the law, there should be some consequences for that as well. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Ines. This might be something you have to check with the Commissioner of Education on, but there's been some controversy about the property situation for charter schools, and if our current lease aid is set to pay market rate rent that includes property taxes, then is there a corresponding adjustment in the governor's budget on the education side to reduce lease aid so that it reflects a new policy that they should not be paying property taxes and therefore their lease payment should reflect that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, that's a very good question. In fact, the numbers you see on the first line underneath the charter school, the $1.3 million and the $1.4 million is a combination of savings of the lease aid payments that come that flow from the Department of Education to charter schools and the PTR impact, because there will be some property tax shift relative to current law on other properties due to this exemption. So it is built in to that number, Representative Loeffler. I could get you a more precise breakdown how much of that $1.4 million savings is attributable to the lease aid payments. But we did meet with Mr. Melcher and Assistant Commissioner Chaz Anderson and talked about the impact this would have on lease aid payments. And supposedly there would be a reduction in lease aid payments reflective of the reduction in the property tax.
Thank you. We have to adjourn really soon. Can you kind of start on the aids and credits? We told folks we'd take public testimony on the governor's bill tomorrow. So looks like we're not going to get through the governor's bill right now, but if we could at least start on aids and credits, finish it up tomorrow, and begin public testimony, that would be helpful.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Sure. I'll just start on the top of page 3, and that is the $250 million proposed reduction in aids and credits to local units of government. This includes LGA, county program aid, and market value credit. The governor is recommending splitting that $250 million evenly between counties and cities. So $125 million would be absorbed by counties and $125 million by cities. We have structured this one so all cities are impacted by it. We do exempt townships from this $250 million cut. When you overlay this calendar year 2010 reduction with the unallotment, the total amount under the governor's allotment slash proposed budget is $450 million for the current calendar year. In way of review, if you remember, the $200 million unallotment that occurred in January was effectuated in January. It was structured a little differently than this. That was structured, it exempted cities under 1,000 that also had an average property tax base below the statewide average on a per capita basis. And also had a per capita cap too as well. So this is a little structured a little different than the unallotment. The net effect is a $450 million spending reduction for the current year. And as you can see, that's extended out to the following biennium, both the unallotment and the proposed recommendation that's in front of you today. If you layer both the unallotment and the proposed budget reduction on top of one another, it represents about a 15% levy plus aid reduction for cities and a 7% levy plus aid reduction for counties. That's worst case scenario. Some cities have less of a reduction than that. On average, I think it's 11% for cities and 7% for counties as a percent of levy plus aid.
Okay. Excuse me. Question from Representative Marquardt. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I guess the question is that, last week when you were before us, Commissioner, you said that you paid for the business tax initiatives when Representative Lincheski came out with this handout that showed the tails and so forth. You said then that you paid for those business tax initiatives with your cuts to property tax aids and credit. And so my question is, and so that means those were paid for by cuts to local government aid that you just mentioned, county program aid, renter's credit. And so my question is, what rationale did the governor use to decide he was going to benefit insurance companies and CAPCOs at the expense of senior citizens and those with disabilities who are going to lose their renter's credit? And likewise, what rationale did the governor use to benefit insurance companies and CAPCOs at the expense of senior citizens trying to stay in their home, keep property taxes down, young families, allowing cities to pay for law enforcement, preparing for floods? What was the discussion there as you said, that was the trade-off. So what was the discussion that put insurance companies and CAPCOs ahead of senior citizens and those with disabilities and cities trying to fight floods and provide law enforcement?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, the trade-off wasn't as direct as that. I mean, what we were talking about was the chair's spreadsheet, which basically showed all the costs associated with this tax part of the budget without any of the corresponding reductions in the out biennium. So even though we didn't have a discussion in the governor's office isolating the tax reductions with the LGA market value credit CPA reductions, but if you take the budget in its entirety, When you look at the things we've included in the tails, we've included making the unallotments permanent, we've included these budget recommendations being pulled out to the following biennium. You got to look at both sides of the equation. The only point I was making is you can't just look at the things that are going to cost money and say, look at the governor's exacerbated the tails by $800 million without looking at the corresponding flip side of the coin, which shows that we are also making budget reductions and budget adjustments in the out biennium on the other side of the ledger. So that was the only point I was trying to make. It wasn't as if we sat down and said, okay, let's reduce LJ and then cut corporate income taxes. It was part of a much larger, more global budget discussion.
Madam Chair. But the chair's question to you, and I think to everyone, was how are we going to pay for these tails? And you volunteered, and you said if you take a look at the property tax aids and credits, that's how we pay for it. So there is a direct link. But the question again then is what was the rationale when you made these decisions or the governor made these decisions? What is the rationale? So we can go back to our districts and say, senior citizen, here's why you're getting cut here. I mean, what we need to explain that.
Senator. Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, and the reason I singled out the LJ Market Value Credit County Program because that's what I'm familiar with. But if you go to the Health Human Services side of the budget, there's plenty of reductions we're extending out to the out biennium. If you go to the higher ed part of the budget, if I was more familiar with that, I could have referenced that as part of the way we're paying for the tax reductions. Well, the governor came to an early conclusion when we put this budget together that the status quo from a competitive standpoint in Minnesota is just not acceptable. And the status quo means we need to knock down some tax burdens for our employers, try to provide some stimulative effect to our economy, and just to set a long-term course to make this a better place to do business, a better place to grow jobs. He made that decision. And he made that decision in the context of looking at a whole bunch of other tough calls. And one of them was, what do you do on the LGA, Market Value Credit, County Program Aid, aids and credits? And when in our priority, hierarchy of priorities, we think making this a competitive place to grow the economy is a higher priority at this point than sustaining all the appropriations and local government aids to cities. And if you look at what we've done here, I mean, I don't think anybody can say 7% of your general fund budget, or their W plus aid, is a draconian cut. Or 15.8% for cities is particularly a draconian cut. It's not as if, you know, these are cuts that are beyond the pale in our opinion whatsoever. And we think it's every bit as high a priority to make our competitive situation here in Minnesota truly competitive. And so, you know, we made a lot of tough decisions. We played around with a lot of different options. At the end of the day, we thought aids and credits to local units of government was a lower priority than improving our tax climate here in Minnesota.
Okay, we have another committee in, so we're going to start up tomorrow to finish local government aid, the rest of the governor's proposal, and we want to get to public testimony, too. There's Representative Garofalo's on the list. Do you want to wait till tomorrow?
I'll wait till tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.
Madam Chair.